assume the Kutin are Samaritans. They seem more similar to Taduka.
Okay, so let me state the following. I'm not going to...
Then the Samaritans are more similar to the Taduka.
What's that?
The Samaritans are more similar to the Taduka.
So this is what I would tell you. Tzedukim, just the labels. Firstly, I'm interested primarily in what Chazal thought. The Tzedukim were undoubtedly Jewish. They just had different halachic shitos than the Pershim. You know, what makes something michutz lamachane like Tzeduki in terms of belief versus Beishamai Beis Hillel, that's an interesting question. But the Tzedukim were basically, there were no questions about Yochsin as far as I'm aware. It's all about halachic shitas. The Kutim, regardless of their actual where they actually originated, so I would say that the Kutim, Chazal identified with the Kutim. Firstly, who Chazal identified them with physically? That's the most important point. Were the Samaritans, right? There are probably many other than the fact that everybody sort of knows that. One of the signs that you can have to that, one of the things that reinforces that point is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which talks about, it's a, those who took Intro to Bible already know this Gemara. It says that originally the Torah was given in Lashon HaKodesh and Ksav Ivri, in Hebrew and in Paleo-Hebrew script. And then and it was given again in Ezra's time in Aramaic, and Ksav Ashuri, and then it says that they chose for themselves Beru Lahem, I guess Klal Yisrael, Lishon HaKodesh, and Ksav Ashuri. They opted for the original language the Torah was given in, and but the script, the Ksav Ashuri. And that, I think, is Rabbi Yose's opinion. And the Gemara says that they left Ksav Ivri for the Hedyotos. Who are the Hedyotos? The Kutim. And what is Ksav Ivri? It's Ksav Libuna, which Rashi tries to give some shot in, and Tosa says, nah, we don't know what it is, but it was some other Ksav. And we know what Ksav Ivri is. Ksav Ivri is Paleo-Hebrew, and we know that the Samaritans use Paleo-Hebrew. It's pretty clear from all the evidence in Chazal, when they refer to the Kutim, they are referring to the Samaritans. Now, the actual origin of the Kutim, well, some of that, Chazal made an assumption about that. I don't know if the Samaritans share that assumption. I have a suspicion that they don't. That's not how they want, even if they, you know, they certainly don't subscribe to any of the three shitos that the Gemara presents, you know, Gimel Machlokos, whatever. They don't hold like any of them. But nonetheless, in terms of understanding the halacha, the Chazal assume what they do about their historical origin. Halacha lemaisa, what is the status of Kutim? So the best I can tell is that Kutim are kegoyim l'chol devrehem. If you do a look, you do a search in the Rambam, it turns up a lot of instances of Kuti. Unfortunately, virtually all of them appear to be censor's terms for goy. In the one place that I think actually that it's clear that he's talking about Kuti, if I'm not mistaken, is Hilchos Avos Atoma, when he talks about Shchitas Akum, and there I think the Rambam lists Akum and he lists Kuti. So it's pretty clear to me the Rambam regards the Gemara in Chulin as normative, that Asan Kigoyim Gemur Mechol Devrayim, period. Whereas the Kutim are not considered Jewish. I would imagine, again, I haven't looked, I don't know what modern poskim have said anything otherwise. I imagine if Samaritan wants to, you know, marry a Jewish woman, Alpidin, he would have to convert. We would require that. That's what I would assume. And as it doesn't sound like they're Suffolk Jewish, but with the taint of Mamzeres, it sounds like regard them as Goyim. Okay? We'll talk about that. Okay, so anyway, the Mishnah here speaks about Elun Arashishim Knas, Habalam Zersan Sina Veha Kutis. So what is a Kutis? So what does Rashi say here? Well, you know, before we get there, let's not look at Rashi here yet. Leave that for the end. So let's first take a look at the origin as Chazal attribute the Kutim. So here we have to read a little bit of Psukim. So it's for those of you who are not, you know, I don't know how many people in, sadly, in elementary school education, firstly, I don't know if they even get the Malachim Beis. They don't get the Malachim Beis. They usually get at least in my day, they got the Malachim Aleph. And then, depending on where you go to high school, even if you do learn Navi in high school, the high school I went to, we had Navi 1 year. But even if you do learn Navi, you may not do Malachim Beis, and you, who knows what you do. So some people might be unaware of some basic elements of Jewish history, so it's worth reviewing very, very briefly. The kingdom in the time of Shlomo split right after Shlomo's death, because Rehavam listened to his young friends and he didn't listen to his elders. Let that be a lesson to you. Because I'll say that if the Yeladim tell you B'nai and the Zakenim tell you Sisor, the Yeladim tell you to build and the Zakenim tell you to take apart, listen to the elders, not to the youngers, because Stiras Zakenim is Binyan and Binyan Na'arim can be Stira. Fine. That split continued to exist through most of the First Temple period until late in the 8th century. I don't remember the exact date. It was probably around 710, sometime between 710 and 720. If it's later, it's only by a couple of years. And at that point, it wasn't Sancheriv. They preceded Sancheriv, conquered. It seems that the northern tribes, including Aver HaYarden, had been exiled in stages. And the final exile took place when he laid siege. Pol is described in the Navi as Pol. For those of you, any of you know ancient or Eastern history, I have a suspicion that's Assurbanipal is his full name. And he was I think he was Sancheriv's predecessor. He laid siege to Shomron. The last king of Shomron was Hoshea ben Elah, and he laid siege to that, and he conquered Shomron. He exiled the inhabitants of Samaria to various provinces in the Assyrian kingdom, and as was the custom back then, at least of the Assyrians, a practice that was probably stopped later, let's say by the Persians, I don't think they did this, was that they would engage in population transfer, undoubtedly in violation of the Geneva Conventions, which didn't exist yet. They actually understood how to do things. It was called might makes right, which still remains the course today as well. If you hadn't noticed, as I'd like to say in few articles I wrote, at least in the Orthodox forum, I spoke about the notion of international law, and I'm pretty sure that while halacha does recognize some basic universal moral principles and things that you're not allowed to do, the mere fact that something is prohibited by international law in itself does not render it halachically prohibited or immoral, because international law currently is simply the law of the jungle, and whoever is more powerful can do whatever they want and not be censured, and those who are a little less powerful get censured, and those who are even less powerful than that get crushed. So that's what we call law of the jungle. But so back then, nobody had any pretenses of international law. To the victors belonged the spoils, and they did whatever they wanted. And thus, when the Assyrian king conquered Shomron, he exiled its inhabitants. He transferred population in there, and amongst the population he transferred in there were some people from the province of Kuta, whose location I have absolutely no idea and have never looked into. Doesn't really matter. Yes, Zach, you can ask a comment. You should read the article that I wrote. If you're that interested, it's in the Orthodox Forum. I don't know when the volume was published, early 2000s. Dina Malchus Adina would assume that there's a world government that whose laws govern you. What?
Does the UN count as a world government?
The UN is a Mickey Mouse institution. I'll just leave it at that.
What do you
sound like one of those paranoid Americans, like we're going to make the UN, trying to make the UN in charge of everything. Yeah, no.
Are you saying that if it was like a real institution?
I explore in the article possible bases for international law and halacha. So you take a look there. It's not a subject that has been much written about, because there's really little in the way of sources to talk about in this. But you can take a look if you want to see.
If
you email me, I'll send you the article. I think I have it on.
It's on
YouTube. It is on YouTube. Okay. Fine. Now, so let's read a little bit of Tanakh. You don't get any Bible credit for it, but nonetheless, we read it anyway. John, can I impose upon you to read? Yeah. Are there any other Johns in the chair? No. Thank you, I didn't. As far as I'm concerned, you're Jonathan, because that's the name you don't use, so I just read off the roster, and that's what it is. Okay, but next time I go read the roster, I'll say Jonathan Raymond, if you would like. Okay, raise your hand. Thank you. And, John. Right, start with Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Actually, no. Take a look at Pasuk Chaf Beis. By the way, one of the interesting things about this chapter in Malachim, any Divrei Yemin people here? No. So this is one of those rare instances you'll find in Malachim, where you get sort of overt theologizing, where you get a long section where it discusses God's direct. In other words, most of the Mishnah, you see the hand of God. It's obvious, but it's just not explicitly spelled out, but you see it. The Jews do mitzvos, they worship God, not Avodah Zarah. They're successful in their wars and their battles and whatever else. They worship Avodah Zarah, and things go downhill. It's obvious, but it's not explicitly articulated. This parak is sort of a summary review of history of Judea and Samaria, of how it didn't go well because they did X and God did Y to them. Go ahead. So, we start with Pasuk Chafez. It's like in the middle of the first paragraph. So they followed the ways of Yeravam, which would not include Baal worship, but it did include worship of the Egle Zahav. Ahav was the one who introduced Baal worship into Israel. Okay, and the end result, Ad. Okay, and the Israelites were exiled from their land to Ashur until this day. Okay, now, Vayavei. So he brought inhabitants from these provinces. Vayoshev. Right, so basically he resettled them in conquered territory. Then, okay, so God sent lions. I know that lions may seem strange to you. Have any of you seen a lion in Israel outside the zoo?
They're
virtually extinct. They're extinct in Israel. What? Slowly?
The Romans wiped them out because they used too many of them in their gladiatorial games.
Right, so there are, I believe it's the Asian lion, some subspecies, which exists about 200 or so plus in the Gur forest in India, or all that's left of it. But once lions did roam the entire area, and you know that because you read Tanakh, and you know that there were lions there. So anyway, so not anymore. There are a lot of other dangerous creatures you might meet in Israel. Some of them walk on two legs, but not any lions. Okay, fine. Vayomru. It's a very interesting term. I don't know if any of you recognize the term. The Ramban uses this in his description of Eretz Yisrael, I believe in Parshas Akev. He tries to, Rashi quotes a Sifrei that says, So Rashi says that even when you go into Golos, Hevel Mitzuyana B'mitzvah. So the question is, what are the mitzvahs that are described in the parasha there? Tefillin, Talmud Torah, those are not mitzvahs atulius baretz. Why would you think not to apply them in Chutz Laretz? So the Ramban has this idea that really the Ikar mitzvahs are only in Eretz Yisrael. Because all the mitzvahs of the Torah, that's Mishpat Elohei Haaretz, and God's land is Eretz Yisrael. So they do apply in Chutz Laretz the mitzvahs which aren't atulius baretz, but that's sort of like, you know, an echo or a pale, you know, version of mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. It's a very Zionist Ramban. But anyway, but he talks about the term Mishpat Elohei Haaretz. In other words, the law of the God of the land of Israel is X, and so that's what's being described by the Navi here. It was the perception of the pagans here was that, hey, they're not obeying the God. In other words, even if we defeated them, even if we defeated the land and conquered it, still, you know, their God has certain kapedas, and so if you violate those, then the lions are going to eat you. So there, so then what happens? So take one of the Kohanim who had been exiled. Not clear what type of a Kohen that was, as the Gemara has a machlokas, but if you think about it, who would those Kohanim have been? They were probably not Levites. In Al-Pi Pshat, they weren't Levites, because remember, Yeravam decided that he wasn't interested in the temple. He wanted his own, and it seems that Shevet Levi, they kind of lost their... They were cast aside by him, so they all went and joined the Davidic monarchy, and so the Kohanim who were left behind, it's hard to imagine they were real Kohanim. Okay. And then, so what happened? It's a funny expression. He taught them how they should fear God. Okay. So firstly, it sounds like this is what they were doing originally. Each one goy had his own deity that he worshipped. They would use the base habamos that the Shomronim, I presume the original inhabitants, the Jews, had made, and each of their cities. Vanshei Bavel. So various groups had made their own deities. Vahavim. Sorfim. It's a creative. Elohei Sfarvayim. Okay. Adramelech and Anamelech, by the way. You recognize those names? Kiva? No, but these two names actually appear elsewhere, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm making it up. They were the names of Sancheirib's two sons who assassinated him. If I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
So they worship them?
What's that?
So they named gods after them? Or?
They named their children after gods.
Yeah, correct.
Mordechai and Esther? Go ahead. So they were all. They would fear God. Again, it's a funny expression, and they made miktsosam kone bamos. So miktsosam, the pshat means from some of them, made them in kone bamos, and they would worship God in the beis habamos. And then the Navi continues. So basically, they would fear God and they would worship their own gods. Yes? Akiva? I went to Akiva.
They didn't consider it sacrilegious at all to name their kids after gods, or?
Whatever. I don't know. Go ahead. John?
Okay.
So, who is this talking about? What? This sounds like it's talking about the Jews themselves who had been exiled. The 10 tribes. Because if you look, it says the previous pasuk described the new inhabitants as Hashem HaYireim. Now, read on. Asher Ad HaYom HaZeh Einam Osim Kamishtam Rishonim Einam Yireis Hashem Ve'einam Osim Chusam Mishpatam. And read Lamed Hei by Yechros. Okay, so God made a bris with them. Who did he make a bris with? Not the people from Kuta and the like. With the Jews, originally.
With the Jews that are living outside of...
Now, the ones who have been exiled, probably. Or it's speaking about... It's repeating the history of what happened when they lived in, you know, in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Andy, you have a question? Or? No. Okay, go ahead. John? Okay, so you should only God who took you out of Egypt. Again, this is not the Kuta. This is not the Kutim. Yes, Achukim. Go ahead. Lamed Zayin. Continue. It's And finally, about the Sumerians, the Shomronim, not our Shomronim, the northern tribes, men. Go ahead. Veloshameyu. Okay, now, Vayu Hagoyim. So it's a contrast between the Jews who had lived in Shomron, who ignored God's will, versus these people who, granted, they worship their gods, but they also worship God. Right? Andy.
Is there a difference between when the Torah says Yirat Hashem versus Yirat Elohim?
I would assume not for the moment. I would assume that I don't think there's any difference between the two. Where do you have, anyway, Yirat Elokim as a phrase? So they're probably, again, this gets into the question of the usage of the two names. That's probably there because Avimelech is a guy.
What about
it makes sense. Well, Yirat Elokim, Chazal read refers to Amalek. In other words, you don't expect the name Yud Kei Vav Kei to be used with non-Jews. That's to be expected.
And then in Vayikra, when it talks about and says Ki
the Aresa Me'alokecha, that doesn't tell you anything. That's not. I know it's the same. It's an Aleph Lamed root, but there you don't. You can't put if you want to say you should be fearful of your God, you can't put a pronominal suffix on Yud Kei Vav Kei. So, okay, Weinrach is just smiling at me. Okay. Go ahead, Daniel.
Who's the subject of Pasuk Mem?
Mem is still, I think, the Israelites, whereas Mem Aleph is the Kutim.
So Mishpat Tam HaRishon. I would have assumed that was them. They were doing what they did before they came.
Well, before the Navi warned them. In other words, even after they were exiled, they didn't learn their lesson. That was even after they are, exile would probably be the dividing line. Albert?
You're saying that Lama Dallas switches over to the Jews?
I think so. Because Lamed Gimel is Hashem HaYireim, as is Mem Aleph, VaYuagayim Eile. But you read the continuation of Lamed Daled, VaYichros Hashem Itam Bris. That's not true about the Kutim.
Well, unless we read that pasuk as it's saying it.
No, Lamed Hey.
And then you get to, and then it says even in Lamed Daled it says Einam Yireim Es Hashem. Mm-hmm. You just said that they were fearing God.
Can't Lamed Daled start with the Kutim and then end with the Shorah?
Well, no, because if you know the trap, I shouldn't remember where the trap breaks here. But you have to say Arayom Azehim Osim Kamishpatim Arishonim. Period. Inam Yireim Es Hashem. It's a very strange way to break it and say that now the antecedent has changed.
JPS reads Lamed Daled as talking about the Kutim, but that's just JPS.
But does that make any sense to you?
They put in brackets when Inam Yireim, like not fully fearful.
But then how do you read Lamed Hey?
No, because Lamed Hey starting with what Lamed Daled ended with. It goes Einam Yireim Et Hashem back in Lamed Daled. Beinam Osim Kachotam keep going because they didn't do what Hashem commanded the Jews when he was Vayichor Hashem Itam Brit.
V'lo shameu kiyam kimishpatam arishonim hem osim and mem. That's a difficult reading. Okay, anyway.
So why are we saying that it's just like you living in Shomron?
Who had. Well, it's a contrast to the Kutim. The Kutim didn't abandon their Avodah Zarah, but they took up the worship of God because the priest taught them, as opposed to the Israelites, who having made a treaty with God and have been warned repeatedly not to, they still breached that. As they didn't worship God, they worshiped the idols instead.
And that's enough to say that it's not Jews in general, or exiles.
Well, I mean, at this point, the Navi's writing only about the downfall of Samaria. Okay, so that's the biblical story of that Chazal assume the origin of the Kutim is. So these were people who have two flaws in terms of their religious spirit. Number one is they continue to engage in syncretistic worship, meaning God and other deities. Number two, they converted. Why? Why do they worship God? Because the lions were eating them. So it means they were misguided on some level. Shalol l'shem shemayim. They had an ulterior motive, not to die. It's a highly laudable ulterior motive, but nonetheless, it's an ulterior motive. It's not purely the shem shemayim. It's not having seen the light and the truth. Although if lions were eating, if I saw lions eating a bunch of people, and then when they started worshiping God, the lions stopped, eating those people, I would assume that I might have seen the light also. But okay, fine. Yes, Daniel.
Stop eating them if they continue to worship other gods,
like because at least they started worshiping Hashem also.
So Hashem,
it was a spiritual improvement, apparently. So that's what the narrative would suggest. You know, there is, by the way, there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that has a very interesting comment that speaks to an odd kind of, it's not quite religious pluralism, but it's kishtayim. We read it in the Haftarah, I think, of Ami Osi, they have done two evils. One is Osi Azvu Mekor Mayim Chayim, lachtod lahem baros baros nishmer mashay la yachilu hamayim. It's good. Okay.
I don't
just. Matos masay?
Yes.
Okay. It's good because if you do it, you know 1/20 of the Torah of it. So anyway, so there's a notion that that other nations haven't, you know, abandoned their gods, v'hema lo Elohim, and they're not even real gods. But you have not only abandoned your God, in other words, there's something inherently wrong when you're disloyal to your ancestor's deity. And on top of that, you've abandoned, you know, Mekor Mayim Chayim for broken boros that won't even hold the water. So there is a notion, of what we'll call Minhag Avos, that the Navi seems to imply has some value as a human being. You know, adherence to ancestral traditions, even if they're wrong. Now, it's obviously not in lieu of, it's not that it's better to choose the ones that, to adhere to ancestral traditions which are wrong, instead of choosing the true religion, but it means at least we can respect the that human impulse of loyalty and faithfulness to ancestral traditions, and certainly we can't understand why anybody would abandon true ancestral traditions for things that are false. Yes,
fine. How do we understand Eliyahu's statement about, I'm a Fayot Hamashmashnei Esteitim, and then the, I don't remember the exact verse.
Em Elohim, Hashem Hu Elohim, Alucha Charav, Ba'ba Alucha Charav.
Yeah, I assume you guys are doing that as hyperbole.
It's rhetorical, yeah. Yeah. Yes, Dan.
Just Hashem shot in the story. This was a penalty Hashem sending the lions?
Yes.
To non-Jews?
Well, yes, because they were violating the law of the land. The Mishpat Elohe Aretz. Okay. Biblical theology is not always identical to our theology. Keep that in mind also. You study enough Tanakh, you start to realize that. And that's okay, by the way. Okay. Theology does develop on some level. I think the belief in a single God is pretty uniform throughout the Bible. But, you know, certain aspects of God's relationship with the world, you see different pictures sometimes. The notion of Poked Avonavos Abanim versus Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel claiming, with a question, Avos Achlu Voser V'Shine Habanim Tikena. Right? So, I think Rabbi Carmi won this. When I took up Yechezkel, made this observation. It seems to be a shift. So theology may not be all, every aspect may not always be static. That's different because that's just the question. That may be more pedagogical than anything else. In other words, that's sort of reducing Torah to what the core underlying values are, but I don't know if that represents a theological
issue. Not that part. The Gemara Makot deals with the exact issue. Like, it quotes the Apocryphal Zalvan in,
right,
and it says, the Yechezkel had this Nebuah, and so quotes the Yechezkel, and then it's like, God laughed.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to look at that later. Okay. I don't remember.
It's a list in a whole bunch of Nebuah. Like,
okay.
Moshe made this Nebuah, here's a later Navi who contradicts that, and I don't remember exactly what point God, like, laughed, but, like, it's somewhere right in there.
Okay. So, anyway, now...
Why are theological shifts okay? Like, let's say Moshe had Nebuah, understood the... I mean,
if you want a very... If you want a very perhaps simple way of understanding it, that in the same way that there's a religious paradigm shift from Bayis Rishon to Bayis Sheni, whereas Bayis Rishon is at the Kufa of Nevuah, and Bayis Sheni begins at the Kufa of Torah, which has sort of persisted. So in the same way that we relate to God differently, so too God may relate to us differently and relate to the world differently. In other words, if God is no longer revealing himself in Nevuah, that implies a different kind of relationship with mankind. It's different. It's not a question of better or worse, it's a different relationship. That's a very complicated subject, but we'll put that aside for the moment. Now on to much more simple things. Gemaras. Okay, what's that?
Sunday.
Okay, I don't know if I have the answers on Sunday either. So. Yevamos chavdalan amid beis. I mentioned this Mishnah. Thank you very much, John. And now, Jonathan, would you like to read? Did you read already yet?
Yes.
You did. Who hasn't read yet? Moshe.
Yeah, where?
Yevamos chavdalan amid beis.
Yeah. Hanitzan al shikna b'shenish tachmarav.
Because you're going to confirm, because it's either either because it looks bad, because first you, you know, messed around and then you go marry her, or because you're confirming what was only suspected. And the nafkamina between those two formulations, as I suggested perhaps yesterday, is whether if it's vadai that you slept with her, not just nitan. Nitan means you were suspected, right? Yes, Daniel.
Wouldn't it be better, per se, like even according to the basic circum, like ki, kafi, shah, and so on, that if you are going to be sleeping with a woman, that you actually do provide a contractual marriage?
Oh, no, no, that is a...
I mean, I understand that these are problematic marriages.
Well, no. The marriage, if he hadn't slept with the shifcha before she was freed, it wouldn't be problematic at all. She's a shifcha mishachara. She can marry her. It's not a problem. The problem was he was cheating. And therefore, now when he goes ahead and marries... So it might be, some say it's only because it was rumors that he was cheating. And then after she gets freed and he goes and marries her, he's simply confirming the laws. And that's not a proper thing to do. It's not an invalid marriage. That's why the Mishnah says, in Konas, next line, emotzi miyado. It's not an isser per se. There's no isser in marrying this woman, inherent isser. It just looks bad. And we believe that not only are you not allowed to do things that are usser, you're not allowed to make a bad impression either. You know, if it... Again, particularly if it is justified, the bad impression. In other words, if people don't understand what you're doing something that's fundamentally proper and correct and good, so you may not pay attention to what the internet lynch mob has to say about your particular actions. But if you're talking about something which already was seedy behavior, and now you go ahead and you marry her, it's like, yeah, okay, well, first... So that, you understand...
But wouldn't you call it like an element of tshuva, so to speak, because then you're sort of like... I understand that you might have sinned in the first place, but...
So you're massive...
The tshuva isn't... The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva talks about, you know, a tshuva gemura. It's not. Tshuva gemura means a person. Tshuva gemura would be, he would find himself at a situation with the same unfreed shifcha, with the opportunity to do the very same thing, and he would desist from doing it because how can I possibly sin and do this? Right, once she's freed and he marries her, he's not resisting the temptation. He's doing the next best thing. It's like when you're dieting, the best way to diet and not eat the foods you don't want to eat is to not bring him into the house. So in this case, she's now permissible to him, and now he can marry her. So that does solve a particular problem. You should have asked a better question: that really, why would he be happy with this arrangement? You know that the Gemara at the end of Ben Sora Mora says that it says they tell a story about a fellow who became sick, and the doctor said that the only way he'll survive, he became sick over a woman. Only way to survive is if he sleeps with her. So the Chachamim said, Yamos Valti Bayla, let him die rather than he have beer with her. Then the doctor said, Tesaper Imo, was there an in-between step? Oh yeah, Tamad Lefanav Aruma. She should stand in front of him unclothed. And the Rabbi Chacham said that Yomos Vel Tamid Lefanav Aruma. Finally, they said to Saper Imo Me'achorei Hagether, whatever exactly that means, and she should speak with him just from behind the curtain, behind the fence. And the Chacham said Yomos Vel Velot to Saper Imo Me'achorei Hagether. So the Gemara says Machlokas whether or not she was an Ishish or a Penuya. And what exactly was the nature of this? Was it over Isser Mamish, or the Chachamim just felt it was inappropriate and Mizal Zal Nos Yisrael? So then the Gemara, it's an unbelievable Gemara. The Gemara asks Akasha, but if she was a Penuya, so why didn't he just marry her? Now, as an aside comment, editorial comment I would make is, I don't really understand the Gemara's question. Why would she want to marry this dirty lecher, right? In other words, this is what he wants. Why? But the Gemara assumes that she'd be willing to marry him. So the Gemara says no, because it wouldn't deal with his needs, because mayim genuvim yim taku v'lecham sisarim, you know. She would then be mutter to him, muteris to him, and it wouldn't be the same thing. There is, by this, a fundamental psychological insight into that. So apparently this fellow, he's willing to marry the shifcha anyway, he's crazy about her. It's unbelievable Gemara. It's the last Gemara in Ben Sora Mora, the end.
If she
unbelievable.
Why would it be?
So the Gemara says it's not that it's al pidin yehari b'alva, but it's takanas benos yisrael. You don't want somebody mezalzel benos yisrael like this. It's demeaning to the purity and the chastity of Jewish women. If he wanted to marry her, Chacham didn't say he couldn't marry her, but to ask her to do this, you know, Ezra.
How can you get
to
Kalev Yarkol Yalv?
Yeah, I mean, that means you should give up your life.
We say there are only three things that are hard to Yalv. How can I add something to it and draw a line?
So again, this is firstly, the issue is not. Let me flip the question on its head. Do you understand why? Let's say we weren't going to impose that. Would we tell this woman that she's mechuyavas to stand in front of him naked because it would cure him? Let's say the Chacham didn't have that objection. Would we tell her, okay, now that you're now that you're a Pnuya and not an Ida, you need now to stand in front of him unclothed because you'll cure him that way. The answer is no. Once you say that, then it's not a problem.
The Chacham,
not for now. I'm sorry, I opened that can of worms. Ask me on Sunday, and I'll happy to deal with it then. Yes, Ezer Shimon. No, so no more on that. Anyway, coming back to our thing, so the halacha is, you can ask on this, is that he's not allowed to marry, but if he did, he'd have to get divorced because it's not really an isser, it's a laws issue. Yes, Ezer Shimon.
I mean, it was on that.
No, I'm not going there. Okay. You see, I mentioned the Gemara that it was a little bit relevant, but then you could go off in that Gemara and you could, it's Rishach like to say, all Shas is interconnected. Fine. Next. Oh, by the way, it's juxtaposed to the next half Moshe, Hanitan.
Yeah, Hanitan al Ishish, Yotziura, Matachad Yado, Apo P. Shekines, Yotzi.
Right, so if he was, again, there are details the Gemara works out, it's not our topic now, but if a man is suspected of having an affair with a married woman, and I would say so much so that the Beis Din insisted that her husband divorce her, he is not allowed to marry her, because if a man has an affair with a married woman, not only is the woman Asura Labaila, but she's also Asura Laboel. And therefore, if they got married, Beis Din would force him to divorce her because it's usher for them to be married. Okay. Whereas in the first case, it's not really fundamentally an issur. It's just it's a gzera because it looks bad. But fundamentally, ekroni, we would say even if he did sleep with her, it doesn't make her really usher to him. Daniel,
wasn't he only nitan in that case too?
So the Gemara talks about that question. It all depends upon the nature of things. Okay. The Gemara says, go ahead. So what are they medayik from?
Because it doesn't have any questions about the fact that she says niskaira. So it seems that.
And presumably, why did she convert?
To marry him.
So the Gemara never. The mission implies that a giyaris miyahav. Vriminhi.
Vriminhi echad ish shniskaira l'shum isha, echad isha shniskaira l'shum ish, v'chein mish niskaira l'shum shulchan lachem.
They're not gerim. So Nechemya holds that people who convert with an ulterior motive are not gerim at all. They're not Jewish. How do you know, by the way, that this woman converted for him?
Implied.
As opposed to, you're right, as opposed to maybe she just converted l'shem shamayim. My answer is that probably if she converted l'shem shamayim, she would be too frum for him. Okay, I say that tongue in cheek, but there's a degree of truth in that. It's not an uncommon thing.
Well, we got good from two, so it's okay.
What's that?
Well, look, we got good from all sides of the result, so it's not always so bad.
Okay, so anyway, go ahead. Shehayir Ibn Nechemya Omer.
Echad Gere Arayos, Echad Gere Columbus, Echad Gere Mordechai Vester, Enon Gere, Achi Skyrim Bisman Hazeh.
That's an odd expression, but it means all these people who convert with an ulterior motive are not gerim until they convert bisman hazeh. The Gemara says, what? They're dead.
Wait.
It has to be like converting today. Converting today, is not a popular thing to do because the Jews were downtrodden. Converting in the days of Shlomo and David, well, that was a good time, It was good to be a Jew. Okay.
Hi, it's Ma'ala. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta Mishmei Zerav Halacha Kedivrei HaOmer Kulam Gerim. Yihachi L'chachila Nami.
So if they're all Gerim, why is he not allowed to marry her? So the Gemara says Mishum.
Mishum to Rav Asi. Amar Rav Asi Haser Mimcha Akshus Peh.
Yikashus Peh Ulazus Vasayim Harchet Mimecha. Right. In other words, you're not supposed to. There are two dinim in Maris Ayin. In halacha, there are two concerns in Maris Ayin. One concern in Maris Ayin, people see you doing something and they're going to make a mistake and think that what you're doing is mutter. Well, there are two possibilities. One is they see you doing something and they think that since you're doing it and you're a firm person, it must be mutter. They see you go into a restaurant and they see you eat food, or they see you, they don't realize you're not eating food, but they think that you can, that's a kosher restaurant. So that's a Maris Ayin of what we call of lifnei iver lo sitein mishal. In other words, you might cause someone else to violate an isser because they're going to think, oh, if you're doing it, obviously it's kosher, it's this, it's that. There's another kind of maris ayin where the people looking at it know that what you're doing is asa, but they'll think that you're an avarion. And this is based upon the pasuk v'yisem nikiyim mehashem u'miyisrael, that when you engage in behavior, you have to be not only proper in the eyes of God, but proper in the eyes of people as well. So that is the lifting even that we're talking about here. Nobody's that's the marasim we're talking about here. That's the principle here. Aser mechab shukspah is v'sem nikiya me'ashem umi Yisrael. That your behavior has to not appear to people to be not. It's not only sufficient that you be honest, but your behavior may not be appear to be dishonest. Okay, fine. So this obviously raises an immediate question: who are the Gerei Arayos? So Rashi writes here.
Gerei Arayos kigon kusiv tesiv b'sefer Malachim vayishlach Hashem bahem es harayot b'niskayru k'tesiv k'tesiv chasam b'galut
Shomron. Okay. Why does Rashi tell you b'galut Shomron? He doesn't remember. There are no chapter breaks yet in Rashi's time. So if it tells you Sefer Malachim, that's a little bit big. You know, in the current structure, Sefer Malachim is probably about, I don't know, close to probably 1,100 psukim or something like that, 1,200 psukim. So Rashi here, remember the Rishonim, when they reference Gemaras, what do they normally tell you?
Perek,
and they give you Beshilhei or Beresh at the end of it, at the beginning of, because there are no Dapim yet. Dapim don't come into existence until the first full printing of the Shas in Venice in the 1520s, and that's when the Dapim were set and fixed, and we don't change them. Verse divisions and chapter divisions, which obviously flow out of the chapter divisions, and therefore chapter and verse flows out of that, was a product, I think, of the early 13th century, and it was a Christian innovation. So this is Rashi's way of telling you, Begala Shomron. Look in the story where Shomron is exiled. So Rashi says that the Kutim here are Gerei Arayos. So according to Rashi, then, when you read the Braisa, when you read the Sugya Kipshuta, what is the din of the Kutim if they are Gerei Arayos? What? What did somebody say?
I mean, they are, but they're just like... Yeah.
They're Jewish. Kulam Gerim him. That's the halacha.
But they kind of get an egg here, so.
What's that?
I mean, they are Gerim. They get a weird... thing. The Gemara is like, them like kind of like an eh. Like, you really shouldn't, though.
Yeah, okay, but put on a B'diavad. Listen, the way it works, I think I mentioned this already at the end of last week or yesterday. What do we do today when someone wants to convert someone they want to marry? Do we convert them?
Yes.
It is done. It seems to be standard practice. This din of the Mishnah is routinely ignored. I mentioned to you, I think last week, the Rambam already writes in a tshuva about the people who were sleeping with the shvachos and they allowed them to free them, or they allowed them to convert them and marry them. They probably were not shivcha kananis in the technical sense, but they were non-Jewish, maids working in the house, because if they didn't, they would continue sleeping with them, and they felt it was better to convert them and let them marry them, because really reduced the issur greatly. It wasn't so much, you weren't supposed to marry them, but that was, you know, gzeira midrabanan, so better to have them convert them and marry them than to be constantly violating Isurim. So it's a din that's been more frequently honored in the breach than actually observed. Ezra Shimon?
Isn't it only done if you're going to Shara Mitzvahs?
That's a separate question. So understand that until the modern era, if someone joined the Jewish community, by definition, they were going to be Shomer Mitzvahs, because you did what the community did. We face a unique circumstance today because we have a secular... We live in a, what we'll call a secular society, where there's an option to be Jewish, but not actually observant. That didn't really used to exist on some level until certainly the period of the Enlightenment. It doesn't mean that all Jews were the most firm people in the world, but if you were in Cairo in the Rambam's time, and you were a woman who converted to Judaism to marry would have been your master. So at the end of the day, you're going to eat kosher food. Nobody's doing work on Shabbos and so on, right? We the modern condition occupies a unique space in that question, where all of a sudden you are someone who wants to convert but not actually observe mitzvahs. Bechlal. That does present a serious problem. That we do insist upon a real Kabbalah Samitzvahs. The question is, to what extent does it have to be a Kabbalah Samitzvahs? So, anyway, so that's what Rashi says, which really creates some very interesting problems, because we're used to reading the Gemara, and the Gemara talks about, are they Gerei Arayos or Gerei Emes? And the Mashmos of the Gemara, maybe it's not explicit, is what? That if they're Gerei Arayos,
they're not Jewish.
And yet the Gemara here is saying Gerei Arayos are good. Now, when you think back for a moment, and none of the Rishonim thought to observe this for Rashi, because they already took their own approach, Rashi in the Mishnah Ksubas says, what about Kutis? Open your Ksubas for a second. What does it say there? Kutis? Moshe, read.
Kutis. Kisabar Gerei Arayos.
So this is very, very interesting. What exactly is Rashi Shita? Now some of you already know the... I find it hard to believe, but you know the answer anyway. It seems unlikely, but it seems exactly like Chachmei Provence, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you the crucial point here. What's the problem with this Rashi? I mean, I guess it's not... Again, if you say, what does it mean, Yeshnam Belosis Chatenbam? If it means that they're really goyim and it's not a conversion, then you're really faced with the problem, as the Rishonim point out, there's no kenas for a goy, for a goya. And the truth is, once there's no kenas for a shifa, you don't expect there to be a kenas for a goya either. And if you say that the Gere Arayos were actually Jewish, which in fact would be what Rashi says in Yevamos, and it would make sense in the Mishnah, then they're Jewish. Kalacha kulam geirim heim. So then, why is there a law of avelos eschaten bam? Yes, Danny.
I know this is not why non-Jews don't have a knas, but given that the end of the Gemara confusion that we saw about the Gereras keeping certain mitzvos extraordinarily well.
Right.
Would it be possible to suggest that? You know, Rashi saying that they were just
shomerim
etatzma.
That they were besulos.
I know that even though even if they have a shifa who's mishomeret etatzma, that she doesn't have a kenas.
So again, I understand what you're saying, except that, again, I don't want to blend to so you automatically assume Rashi holds the same way in all places. But in Yevamos, the way Rashi reads the Brisa there, it's explicit that they're Jewish. So if, that, and he doesn't say otherwise, he just says they're Gerei Arayos. In other words, why doesn't he want to say Gerei Emes? Why don't you want to say Gerei Emes? Correct. And what are you going to tell me? That there's a suffix, they were Mamzerim? We already said Mamzeris. So it really, Rashi really, Sam, does sound like the Shita of the Rav of the Meiri. In other words, if you put together what he said in Yevamos together what he writes here, he assumes that Los Eschatim applies. Los Eschatim applies b'Gerusan, and it's very much like, just as the Ravid and the Meiri wanted to say by Nesinim, that since they didn't really convert sincerely, they only converted out of fear. They're not goyim anymore, but they're not geirim kshirim lava bakal until they do a real another geirus. So Rashi might say the same thing here. He would say that the kutim are Gere Arayos, therefore they're Jewish, so she gets a knas. You don't have to deal with the problem of the Gemara and Daf Yad Aleph. But the reason why the Belos Eschatim Bam is precisely because they're not 100% Gerim, because they were converted in a very weak fashion, only out of the sphere. Yes.
Why do you say Belos Eschatim Bam applies to them, even though they're not part of the Shevamos?
So here's the other point. In other words, in order. You would say that Los Eschatein Bam, if in fact you hold like the Ravid, what you're really saying is Los Eschatein Bam applies, let me say this differently. If you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, or like the Ramban, then Los Eschatein Bam is specifically a mitzvah on the Shiva Amamim. It's Exeris HaKosov, that either they're treated like Amoni Moabi, it's a nationally centered or focused Isser. So therefore, they're treated like Amoni Moavi, even for one generation, forever. But that's really what it boils down to for Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramban. But once you say like the Ravid, where the Svara is that because the conversion was not a proper conversion, they're in this liminal state, they're in between, that shouldn't necessarily be limited to the Shiva Amim. And why should that be? If the whole idea is that they're still Adukim Vavodah Zarah, and the truth is it fits, that particular issue fits the Kutim as well. And therefore they haven't fully purified, so they're way underwent a conversion, so they're Jewish. They're Mechuyev in Tarei Mitzvos. But they're not allowed to marry to the Kol because their conversion is still has a Chisor in it. So the exact same thing would be said for the Kutim. Is why should that be limited specifically to Shiva Amim? Al Pisvara, it should apply to any guy who converts but doesn't yet fully shed his connection to Avodah Zarah. And the Kutim would fit that to a T. And does that make sense?
I just thought, like, since the psukim were talking about seven specific needs.
So remember, firstly, if we say, now this would solve Rashi as well, but it creates the problem of why would you give a kanas to a goy. If you say that los ischate bum is begiyusan, then everybody agrees. I think that it somehow applies to all goyim, not just the shiva amim, to marry a non-Jew. Right, bottom line. So it's not inconceivable that we read los ischate bum broader than the pshuta shemikra, which is the seven nations listed in the previous pasuk. So I hear the question, but we already have precedent for doing that. So that's the case. For the Ravid's view, you could say los ischate bum applies not only to the shiva amim, but anyone whose conversion would be doma to the shiva amim's conversion in that generation.
Okay.
Mati?
Can we apply los ischate to any non-Jews?
That's what I'm saying. Begiyusan. Only. That's why I'm saying, for the Ravid, it might very well apply to all nations in their quasi-Gerusan. In their quasi-Gerusan. I've got to say it clearly. Right? In other words, when they convert, but not a proper conversion, so you'd say it applies to all of their voters are in that category, that they are now Jewish, but not fully Jewish. They're psulei kahal until they convert again, with a full Gerus of the Shem Shemayim. Yaakov.
I don't know enough about why specifically are they included in this?
So you can ask that. Tosfos asked your question from different angles. Firstly, al pi din haMishnah, the kutim are Jewish in all respects, but there are certain things they don't have nemanos for. There are certain things they didn't observe, and so on and so forth. But they are Jewish until the Gzeira Rabbi Meir. Until the Gzeira made and attaching itself to Rabbi Meir's sheet of Chayshim Lemiuta, that they're Ovdei Avodah Zarah Gemurim, until that point they were treated as Jewish, but they didn't observe all mitzvahs, or they didn't observe all mitzvahs the way we observe the mitzvahs. So they were Jewish. Absolutely. Tosfos asked from a different angle if there was a psul in the kutim. Tosfos asks if the issue of a kuti. We're going to read shortly the Gemara in Kiddushin. But if the issue of a kuti is a suffix whether he's Jewish or not because of their geri arayos, the way most Rishonim read the Gemara in Kiddushin, and they're going to deal with the Gemara in Yavamas however they deal with it. So then the question is, why do you ever have to pay a kanas here? Because you can always say the ones and the mafata can say, prove to me that you're Jewish. Ein halchem ma'acharo, maybe you're not Jewish. So Tosfos says there, the reason why we don't, in this case, we give her the chazakah of her ancestors that most were Jewish, because we don't want chote to be niskar. But in principle, you would be right. In other words, once you if you held them as really a suffix not being Jewish, then you wouldn't give them as you wouldn't give her a kanas either. In principle, you wouldn't. Well, what did I answer your question?
Yeah, but just about the Tosfos. If she's not Jewish. Then yes, he did something morally reprehensible potentially. But was he really chote? If someone doesn't actually do the chayv as defined.
No. If he raping anara, an onus and mafata of anachris is also aser. No heter being mazik anachri.
But is there any punishment?
Presumably, whatever nezek you would pay, I assume you pay nezek tzar and boshes. I don't see why not. There's no knas. There are lots of situations where there's no knas. The whole question here, the whole discussion is just about knas. So why don't you say that I'm pater of knas because of a rov? Because of ein halcha malcha rov, and I'm following the miyav. So Tosfos' answer is because we have the chote would be even if that if you hold that the chashash of kutim is nesare b'hem mamzer, it's not a shaila because it doesn't matter whether a woman's a ksher or mamzer, she still gets a knas. But if the suffix is whether she's Jewish or not, so that, or whether an Eved was Misariv amongst them, so whether she is an Shifcha or not, or a Baschorin, so then Tosfos says, why didn't you say that? I'm sorry. If she was a Suffolk, right, Suffolk whether mom's there or not, no problem, right? But if it's a Suffolk whether she's Jewish or Suffolk whether she's Shifcha, in that case, why didn't you say Hamotzi Mechaver Lev Haraya? And she would have to prove that that she is in fact Jewish and not from a line of Shifcha. And the answer is, you're right, but we don't want Chote to be Niska. Is there a question down there? Danny, yeah.
If the Katun, the Tina, the Kuti are coming from the same place that they're Gera and Raya, and they have this Isra Katun even when they convert, then why would you need to have the Tina and the Kuti and the Mishnah?
Why do you need both, according to Rashi? So the truth is Rashi would say that the Givonim were, he might say that they were Gerim Gemurim in HaTorah. they weren't Gevir Arayas. Why would he distinguish between the two? So he might very well give a very simple teretz. He could use the same teretz that Tosus uses to distinguish between Gevir Arayas and the Kutim. Rashi could say the Nesinim were good Gevir Min HaTorah because they didn't worship, continue to worship Avodah Zarah. Problem with the Kutim is that they never actually abandoned their deities. Right, and that is an essential, that lack, even though they accepted mitzvos in a sense, and they accepted Yud Kei Vav Kei, nonetheless, they weren't Gerim Gemurim. Whereas the Nesinim, who accepted everything, were Gerim Gemurim. In other words, their motivation might have been not totally pure, but their actual Geirus was pure, whereas the Kutim's Geirus was not pure. So that's the teretz that we'll see in the second Tosis and the Rashba more or less give to explain the stira between Kutim being Gerim Arayus equals not Jewish, and the Gemara Yevamos that says Halacha Kulam Gerim Heim. So that very same teretz could be, as Rashi can, you can subscribe to the idea of this twilight zone of Geirus, where you're Aser Bakol, but you're Jewish, so you have all the mitzvos that Chachmei Provence have by Nesina. You can subscribe to that idea without actually thinking that Nesina falls in that category. Right? You could think that that applies to the Kutim. That's how you could explain Rashi. And that you're right, for Rashi, we'd almost want to say that, because otherwise Nesina and Kutis would be the same thing. They'd be both examples of, in effect, Geir Arayus. Gerim, whose conversion was not fully proper, and therefore they're sort of in this in-between zone.
Daniel. If the Gerus isn't fully proper, isn't the Svara behind why they need to be somewhat, or why they need to be Jewish, so that you can trust that she's a Besua? And if, as long as she's born into the community, even if, yeah, her dad, or on the theological...
See, so she does get a Knas.
Yeah.
No, that's the Din.
That's
correct.
So then why would it even make a difference if she's, like, even if somewhere...
No, so the Mishnah's, because why does the Mishnah have to tell us about Mzeres? Same reason. In other words, they're listing Psula Yuchus, where there is a Knas still. Despite the fact that she might be a Sura Lava Lakahu, still there's a Knas. Right? Again, that's Lafuke from the Tanaim, we're going to see on that base, who say Velosi Elisha only when she's Ru'uyala. Okay, so now, how does Tosus deal with this problem? Continue.
Hagiros Miahapia.
No. That's the Rashba.
Oh, sorry.
Top of the page. Sorry, I did that. I apologize. I did that to save space. Because if I put the citation at the end, then I don't have to waste the title line. So Tosus, what's his question immediately? He sees the stira between this Gemara that says that kulam halacha kulam gerim heim, and the Gemara that's saying kiddushin that says that if they're gerim arayos, they're not Jewish. So what you just said, that the gerus is good here. Tosus says they're not the same. Why the Hassan?
Hayu obdim Eloheihem in a siv the sefer malachim.
Right, so the second shita that says that the Geri MS would say that they subsequently abandoned their Avodah Zarah and converted a second time, and that Lechulei Alma should be certainly that would be good. There's no problem whatsoever. Okay, Rashba says more or less the same thing, I think. Daniel?
So in Tosfos framework,
what? Tosus, I thought. No?
I found that they had two very different answers.
One second. I put it here for a reason, but when I read it again this morning, I thought that was the same thing.
Rashbam, right? Tosus and the Rashbam on our sheets?
Tosus and the Rashbam on the sheet? Yeah. Why do you see any difference?
So the second, the Gary MS, why are the Gary MS according to Tosus?
According to Tosus.
Oh, no, okay. No.
He's talking about it.
I'm talking about in principle, in other words, their answer is the same. The reason why the man da Amar that said, they explain what the Kutim Geri MS, halachically speaking, there's fundamentally no difference between the position of Tosos and the Rashba. They both say that if they didn't abandon their Avodah Zarah in the conversion, that would be called Geri Arayos, who are Goyim. And they would both say that if they did abandon, even if they did it out of fear, if they abandoned their gods, it would be an acceptable Geirus. The only question is, according to the Shita, that the Kutim are Geri Emes, how do they become Geri Emes? So Tosos says they became Geirus because they reconverted, because their first conversion was zero Minatora. And the Rashba says, no, the Mandam that says Gary Emes says that even though you know that ultimately.
So how does he read it?
How would the Manda Omar read it?
According to the Rashba, what is Gair Ligamrei, even though they were still of the Bodhisattva work out?
So Ridva's
I don't know how he reads the psukim there. In other words, maybe the psukim there don't. In other words, it made him so different than Tosa. The psukim there don't really refer to the post-Gerer stage; they refer to the pre-Gerer stage. In other words, he would say that the line that the Kohanim then came and taught them, and for a while they were still sitting with this, and then finally they abandoned
the Gerer. So is it like
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not a machlokas in substance. What do you see? You want to. I don't think the Rashba. How would you envision the Rashba? Once you read the first line in the Rashba, how do you see? How do you want to differentiate between the two?
Assuming at this point, I'm really wondering, for instance, the machlokes between the two Deus according to Tosfos, is that they both agree on the same level.
How to read the Psukim, and the question is whether they subsequently converted again.
And then the machlokes between the two parts of the Rashba are.
So I would say the Rashba would say that the reason why the first Geirus wasn't good was just like Tosa said, because they didn't really, according to the Manda Omar, Geirah Rayos Haim says that they, because they were worshipping other gods, that's not the Geirah Rayos of the Gemara Yavamos, that's a different Geirah Rayos. And then what about the Shita that says that once you're going to say that if they have other gods, you know, that's not called a Geirus Gemura, so then the Rashba says, well, how can you have a Mandarma that says Geirah Emes Haim? And the answer is because they would say the Machmas Sibas Harayis, this guy with the Gamre. In the end, they did. They abandoned their Avodah Zarah, even though the Navi doesn't tell us about it. I don't know how else, you know, how do you want to read it? And there's the Manam Agiri MS says what? So he would say that they never worshipped the Rai. The Navi
despite
says they did.
Or maybe there's a way to have a complete Geirus in their intent, but they didn't have
full observance.
The next day they went back.
They haven't gone back, but maybe that's considered the Gamre.
They converted legitimately.
Exactly.
The same thing with any gear. Now they
okay. So, but again, I think you're reading too much into the difference there. In other words, I don't think Tosis would necessarily argue with that either. He would say that once this guy of the Gamre, the Gemara knows the category of Chazar Lesuro.
I mean, he had to assume that there was a second Shivrin's Gamre, meaning that there was a second Geirus process.
Correct. In Mitzias, there's a difference. I agree. But I think that in principle, I don't.
People generally like.
No, there's a machlokes in Mitzias between Tosfos and the Shita of the Rashba, which is explicated more in the Ritva, which says that in the Ritva, the Ritva reads the Sugya Malachim differently than Tosfos reads it. Tosfos says that they were always worshipping the two. Yes, the Sugya Malachim, the Perek Malachim. I don't care what you call it. Yes, so Tosfos says that according to Tosfos, at the same time they were worshipping, at no point were they not worshipping both God and the Avodah Zarah. The Ritva says that they were worshiping God, and then at some point later, what he implies it was several years. So, and according to the Ritva, the Ritva reads the Pesukim and Malachim fundamentally differently than Tosfos does. So it's just a machlokas.
It's actually also exactly how Rashi ends up reading it as well in Sanhedrin. The Rashi in Sanhedrin assumes that for those who have for that shita of. That they did have Gary Emes is that they did have Gairus Emes, and then later they hear Sha'ab. That what that ends up leading is the way the Machlokes and Yevamos ends up working is how does Tosfos and Rashba end up reading Yevamos, I think might also
No, but again, that's a machlokas, what he's describing. I mean, call it a machlokas, but it's the way of reading the psukim.
And then that machlokas, I think the machlokas, in the different way that Tosfos reads in the Rashba, and the Rashba ends up reading it, is you might go back to Yevamos and see how they read the Gemara. I mean, the machlokas between Rabbi Nehemiah and Rabbi Yitzchak, according to Tosfos, is totally unrelated to Kutim in general.
Correct.
I wonder if that's. But according to Rashba, why couldn't you?
But the Rashba also.
Rashba
starts out by saying.
It's really odd. He would hold. I mean, according to Tosfos, of course, he has to hold that it's not unrelated because the Kutim in general, by how they were, but that they never had a good
version.
And that would have no application to the Yavamos.
Right.
According to the Rashba, why couldn't you read Yavamos the same way Rashi does, almost that one is whole, or and it's really machlokas between where the Kutim. It's almost about the Tosfos about the Kutim.
Correct. Well, machlokas of whether. Well, you could read, well, the Rashba, I would just say for the Rashba, what it means is that the two deos, Geirah Eres, Emes, and Geirah Arayos, are arguing exactly what happened in the Pesukim. In other words, the Shita that says that they were Geirah Arayos says they never abandoned their Avodah Zarah. It was always syncretistic. And the Shita that says Geirah Emes said that no, the way he quotes the Ritva, it's likely the same as the Rashba, which is that they first converted and worshipped God, and then they started worshipping there with the Zohar again.
The Gemara and Yavamos could be read according to the second day of the Rashba. why does he have to say that neither of them are according to Imamos? Right? Same way that Rashi could almost read that that Imamos is talking about Kutin, because he believes that really they're Geri.
You want to say that Rashba should have just said that the Geri Arayos were the ones who... And why didn't you just say the Gemara Yevamos is talking about those who converted and then reverted?
The other one. It could be read that Manz Amr Geri Emes Hain, by the time Dr. Amr Demach Masivas HaArayos, HaAriot, which is exactly what Yevamos is talking about, and it's Gari Lagamri. So why is that not the exact same thing as our Gemara Yevamos, according to the one who said... Geri Emes is describing the scenario in Yevamos.
No, except for then you wouldn't have called them Geri Arayos.
Why not?
Because they weren't Geri Arayos. They were Gerim who later worshipped Avodah Zarah.
The difference. The difference is either
no,
way
the point is
the exact same process.
No, but both the Rashba and Tosas, the sheet of Geri Arayos and the
Rashba has one that there is one according to Tosas, the Geri Arayos I believe are also and therefore they were not good Gerim. According to Rashba, they were Geri Arayos and therefore are good Gerim.
No, because the point is they
were Demach Masivas HaArayos and Gerim Lekamre.
Yes,
Arayos is actually the good Gerim, according to the Rashba, which is not what Tosfos says. There's the ones that say Arayos, and therefore not good Gerim, and then there's one that says the Geri Emes.
So what
as opposed to Geri Arayos? The Rashba has a scenario where it's there were Sivas Arayos and there are Gairi Lagamre.
One second. So, in a Hanami, you could say that, except that you want this Braisa also to work. Your answer could have been, is that you're saying for the Rashba, the answer could have been that this Braisa holds like the Manda Amar, holds like the Manda Amar Geri Emesheim, but is calling them Geri Arayos. That's really what you're saying.
He says even the Geri Emes, there's an idea, there's an absence of Geri,
that they converted the Geri Emes, she does the Geri Emes, but they converted because of Arayos, but they call Geri Emes because there was no Avodah Zarah tainting it. But the point is, if he's calling it Geri Emes, even though it's Machmas Arayos,
which would be sort of like maybe it's his Maskana of this Gemara Nivamos, or it could be.
It's very clever, but I think the Rashba assumes that there's terminological leveling. So when we use the term Geri Arayos here, it has to be. Either it's the same thing. You're not going to use two separate terms for the same phenomenon, especially when you confuse them. So the Rashba would say that there's Geri Arayos 1, Geri Arayos 2, and Geri Emes. Geri Arayos 1 are people generally who convert because of fear of lions. Geri Arayos 2 are the Kutim who didn't actually do a proper conversion because they were also worshiping their gods. And Geri Emes in the Kutim Sugya are people whose model is actually Geri Arayos 1. But we would never call them Geri Arayos because then we would confuse them with Geri Arayos 2, which is the version that sees the Kutim as not being good Geri. That's why. No, it's because in the other sugyos it's juxtaposed as Geri Emes or Geri Arayos. You can't use the term here, Geri Arayos, for the ones you're calling Geri Emes there.
Just decide to call somebody else just because of the semantics?
For confusion purposes, that's real.
Okay.
It's a very sharp question, I admit. I admire the question, but I think the answer is a simple one. It's a little bit, it's a very sharp, but at the same time it might be labeled as a klutz kasha. I think because the other one, in the other sugya, it's Geri Arayos, Geri Emes. You can't leave this as the same.
That's not going to be some difference in how they see like Geri Arayos.
I don't think so. Sharp. I don't think so. Wear me out here. Moshe.
Yeah, wait. So if they're worried about semantics, why did they do the whole thing with two Geri Arayos? Why not just start with one Geri Arayos and like have no other Geri Arayos?
Well, that's neat for Rashi. The problem is that the other Rishonim saw it as impossible. As they thought the other Sugyos implied that Geri Arayos aren't Jewish, so they have no choice. It's obviously it's suboptimal. To have to do that, but they don't have a choice in that. But to say what's called... Now, here we're saying there are tzvei dinim, tzvei kinds of Geri Arayos. But what he's suggesting is that what is called Geri Emes in one sugya is called Geri Arayos in another sugya, which is doubly confusing because in the other sugya where they call Geri Emes, they're juxtaposed to Geri Arayos.
Okay.
That's why I don't like... That's why I think the Rashba is not saying... doesn't say what he's suggesting. Daniel.
According to Tosos' understanding of the Geri Emes Shita... what happened in the psukim was problematic. Then at some later point,
they came around to Mubakayo again legitimately.
Correct.
So why at that point are there these restrictions on Kutim about Yichus issues and all this? Meaning if they abandon their Avodah Zarah, according to Tosfos, understanding of Geri Emes.
Well, 1 second. No. If you hold their Geri Emes. So you hold
correct.
The Geri Emes. You're asking if they're...
Why,
did you get through the Gemara Kiddushin?
Not all of it.
So the Gemara Kiddushin, the point is, you hold, like Rabbi Akiva, for example, that they're Gerei Emes, and the Kohanim Shenitmuahem were Kohanim Ksherim. So then you have to ask the question, the Gemara asked the question, why are they Usur, in fact? And the answer is because some other Suffolk Mamzerus that got mixed into them, or something like that, or Suffolk Abdus. Indeed, if you hold that they're Gerei Arayos, and they're not, and the way most Rishon read, they're not Jewish, so the answer is the reason why you can't marry Kutim is because they're Suffolk Jewish, Suffolk not Jewish. At least, starting with that. Even if you don't hold like Rabbi Akiva that Eved Vakma Babai Sisra Vlad Mamzer, still they may not be Jewish. Whereas, if you hold that they're Geri Emesim, so it's not that's not the Shaila, so then it becomes they're not Bekiyim Bedikduke Mitzvos, which means they're not Bekiyim Begit Mekidushin, and they somehow Mamzerus got mixed in, so Suffolk Mamzer. Yep, that's the reason why. Not because of the original conversion at all.
So, am I to assume that whether you're holding like Tosfot, whether Ashba, the Geri Arayot Shita would say the Kutim can rectify their situation by converting.
If you held like
Geri
that,
Emet Shita would hold, there's no
if you believe that Eved Va'akum Habal Bas Yisrael, the Vlad is not a Mamzer, which we do Paskin like, and you believe that the Kutim were really Geri Arayos, then yes, they can rectify the situation by converting. I assume today, again, as I mentioned this, I haven't looked to see if Post can talk about this, I assume if a Samaritan wants to marry a Jewish person, they have to convert, but they can convert. Let's say, as opposed to the Karaim, where Hachamo Vadir Seif aside, many of the poskim write that Hakaraim and Misachim because they're assumed to be Jewish, but this Chashash Psalmam Zerus, I believe, is the reason why.
So we assume Geri Arayot nowadays.
We assume they're not. We assume they're not Jewish. We are assuming Geri Arayot, yes, and not the Rashi version. Zach.
The Rashi was saying, it looks like he says, one dama that Gerarayos hang, meaning that they're not Jewish, is because they have Avodah Zarah.
Because they never abandoned their Avodah Zarah, at least not in it, right.
And then he says the other Shita says they're Gerar Enes, meaning they are Jewish because they're Gerarayos, which means
It means because they converted out fear of the lions, but they did for a time at least abandon their gods.
He doesn't say that. He just
the Rashba, you mean?
Yeah, the Tosos says that. The Rashba doesn't say that at all. He just says that.
So he doesn't spell it out, but what thank you, Dan Ashlein pointed out, is that you look in the Ritva, who frequently is following his sort of, it's not his main Rebbe, it's his Rebbe's rival, but it's often the same Shita that follows through, is that the initial conversion was, initially they didn't worship the gods, and then they resume worshiping the other gods. How else do you want to read the Rashba?
Wait. He says, one Mandamar says, if you just take the two sides of the argument, one Mandamar says it's because they worship the Avodah Zarah that they're not Jewish, and then the other Mandamar says they are Jewish, which means despite the fact they were worshiping the Avodah Zarah. Not like Joseph, who says, I agree. The Rabbi Kiva would say, I agree. They worship the Avodah Zarah, not Jewish, but happens to be that they were the Shumis Gairu Lagam. The Rashi doesn't say it. He just says, it's because they were the machlas sibas harayos gadol. That is a good gerus.
Except for that, if Tosos were saying that they worship the Avodah Zarah, it doesn't matter. He wouldn't have formulated it that way.
What's that?
Rashba would not have formulated it that way, right?
What would he do that?
He would have said that the Manda Amar Geri Emesain would have said that it doesn't matter if you worship the Avodah Zarah. He doesn't say a word of that either. And that's why I'm inclined to rely upon what the Ritva fills in, you know, which I assume is the Shita in Spain, that it's because there was a time when they went to Skyri Lagamri, even though they resumed later worshipping Avodah Zarah, which is like a Ger, Shechazar Lesura, who's a Ger.
Do you think the sentence in the Rashba is just...
truncated, it's nice to spell it out. Because it's inconceivable to say that he thought they were worshipping Avodah Zarah. How does he make that fit? In the Yeshua, the Hainu Ger asked the Kutim, show you Ovdom Lahem Ktachsiv, right? In other words, they're not. The Miskayin and the Gamri means what? They don't worship Avodah Zarah. They don't convert for the right reason.
That's the first mandat. Now
he says, about being the Kutim, and the Shita that says that the Kutim were Geri Emes. He uses the exact Kedamar and the Machbasibas and Skyri Lagamri. When he used that word a line before in the Skyri Lagamri.
That's a perfect parallel of people who don't also.
worship Avodah Zarah. Use that exact expression in the line before for people who were unlike the Kutim. They were unlike the Kutim because they didn't worship Avodah Zarah. Converted out of fear, but they didn't worship Avodah Zarah. So when he says, the man damar, Geir Emesain, Taimi Temer, the Machmas Yeferes, Nisgai Rilagamri. Nisgai Rilagamri means they didn't continue worshiping Avodah Zarah. Ah, but the Pasuk says they did. So that, I assume, is what the Ritva says, that later they resume worshiping.
Is there anything behind this machlokas other than they just didn't know what happened? Meaning Rashi, Tosos, or all these things, is that just a confusion of...
Well, no, it's because they have to bend things to sort of fit. No, only Rashi doesn't have the problem. Rashi takes Dvar and Kipshutan.
Uh-huh.
But Tosos is forced, and the Rashba forced into a corner because they don't want to... Not because it's not even picking the Mount Amar. In other words, the Sugya and Kiddushin, for example, is mashma that... If they are Geir Arayos, they're not the way they read that Suya, which is probably the simple way. Man Namai Geir Arayos is that they are not Jewish. So how can this Gemara turn around and say Geir Arayos are Jewish? Halacha Kulam Geirim Him. So they're forced to start making a distinction between two kinds of Geir Arayos. And there's the Kutim, who worship Avodah Zarah, that's not a real Geiris. Other Geir Arayos, who do it out of fear but don't worship Avodah Zarah, that's a real Geiris. But now they've created another problem for themselves. If that's the case, how could anybody say that they were Geir Emes? In other words, if worshiping Avodah Zarah, if syncretistic worship for a Geir means it's not a good Geiris even with the Eved, so how does the Shita that says Geir Emesheim, how can he stand? Because after all, the Pasuk says they were engaged in syncretistic worship. So that's what the Ritva spells out, is that, so Tosus gets around it a different way. Tosus says, some point later they converted.
Read Yavama said as not actually reaching a conclusion. Even though they say halacha, it seems that the next meaning the first brisa is machlokas about the idea of having altruistic ulterior motives. Then they have someone that are be.
So you want to say how do we paskin?
And then it says Tana Rabbanan emakalim gerim nimas hamashiach. Now that can easily be under the exact same idea of because we don't hold of. Because we don't have people coming with ulterior motives. Almost seeming going in the face of what we say the halacha here is.
No. Ein mekablin geirin. Mekablin geirin refers to chatchila. That's what we talk about being mekabel geir is what we choose to do. But.
And the first half about. Echa geir arrive, echa geir come about, echa geir
morning. Ein on geirin. Yes. No, that's absolutely cool. That's pshat. Ein on geirin means. Yeah. No, just Einam Geirim, it's like the Rambam saying Eino Get. Verse he uses very get possible, but Einam Geirim means they are not Geirim at all.
And Ein Mekablin
means we're not allowed to be Mekabel them. In other words, I believe
but
that.
If they converted, then that's good.
Then B'dieved, the conversion is good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that I think is stand. That's true across all the Sugya of Geiris. Now there's another, and it's a true principle in general. There are many situations where you're l'chatchila not supposed to expect geirim, but if a proper beis din does the geirus, then the geirus is good. The good b'dieved. That's why you had the whole controversy, with some outrageous comments when some dayan or someone in the Haredi world wanted to invalidate all of Reb Drukman's conversions. They wanted to argue that any of these batei din that are converting people that they thought you shouldn't convert are by definition batei din psulim. So the geirus is no good, not because they weren't supposed to accept the geirim, because b'dieved the geirus would be good, but because they were pasul adayanim. That was the only way you could go about pasuling them. Because you have a kasher based in under almost all circumstances that's megayer someone who they're not supposed to be megayer, but they do it as a proper procedurally, the geirus is chal b'dieved. The only way to invalidate it is to invalidate the based in. You have to say, well, any Beis Din that did that, by definition, is a Beis Din Pasul. Which clearly, on some level, is wrong, at least as a matter of principle, because just because a Beis Din converts someone they shouldn't convert doesn't render them a Beis Din Pasul, because otherwise there would be no difference between a Mekablin and Einam Geirin. Because by definition, anyone who's Mekabel them would be, we'll say, get the other, we have a Psulim to be on a Beis Din, and therefore the Geirus wouldn't. In other words, if you take three people or Psulim who aren't Kasher at all to be Dayanim, in any way, and you do a Geirus, you take a Mechal Shabbos or something like that, or a Kofar Batorah, and you put them on a Beis Din for Geirus, so the Geirus is not good, but the Eved.
They couldn't just all be Mechal Shabbos.
What's that?
You have to get three types of.
I got two types, and there was a reason why I put the second type in there. Okay. Alright, so where does that leave us? So it leaves us with Tosus and the Rashba being forced to try to split between two kinds of Geir Arayos. So now the last question we're really left with to deal with, which we'll do tomorrow. I'm not going to start this now, is going to be why are the Gerei, why, what is the issue with the Kutim? What is it? The Mishnah says that Kutim apsulim b'alkohol. And now the question is, why? So it's really the only major question that we need to deal with. And then, very briefly, look at Gemara and Chulin, is I believe Bisman Hazeh. If anybody has time, any of us, and wants to see if anybody has contemporary chuvos, you know, about Kutim. I'm sure the question must have arisen, you know, of a Samaritan who was OTD and wanted to go to learn in a yeshiva or something like that. I don't know if you've had any cases in the reverse. I have my, I'm sure you have such that some case, but I don't know how the Samaritans paskan halacha, but I know how we generally paskan halacha. So if anybody has a chance to maybe to search for chuvos that deal with Kutim, it's not that hard to do the search. You could see if you come up in any of the recent chuvos with that. Okay. They want to say that again?
They want the Samaritans in the army because they are Israeli citizens. They'd rather have them convert.
Okay, so that means they assume they need to convert and can convert. Okay.